Hey, my name is Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you're listening to The Great Estate, a podcast about parenting.
We've got 6 kids and 2 PhDs in psychology between us, so we mostly know what we're doing.
Yeah, but not all the time. When our children throw us a curveball, we fall back on some basic parenting principles that are known to promote healthy and happy kids.
So that's what we're going to talk about today. Strategies for navigating difficult moments and keeping a sense of humor about ourselves.
And our kids.
Okay. We have a belief, and I think it's true, that babies crave routine. Babies do well when things are very...
Children do well,
routine.
Not just
babies. Children, yeah. Adults, do well when
predictable
things...
Predictable about their environment.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's great to a point, but I think we have the potential of falling into a trap and staying with things that are familiar. And I think we can really do babies, children, adults a disservice by not branching out and doing and introducing novelty. I mean, I think that is that's sort of the fundamental principle here. Introduce novelty early and often.
Yeah, and at some point making novelty less novel.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, so that novelty, it's not always about like, ooh, look at the thing that's different. But in fact, finding opportunities for differences becomes the expectation, that differences is the expectation, is the norm, and that's good, and that it's not about finding the exception.
I've also recently learned that when you're learning something new, and this makes good sense, your brain is processing more. And so I think that there is a way to think about the importance of introducing novelty, because it is building brain power. Mm. It is getting your child's brain to be constantly thinking, processing, learning.
And there's lots of ways, sort of really concrete ways and more abstract ways as children are getting older to help to foster this appreciation for lots of different experiences and lots of different perspective and lots of different sort of abilities and ways of navigating the world, not just their own path, but the paths that are all intersecting and traversing their path. So there's the new food thing, you know, with babies. We often, even in my house, talk about just sitting at another seat at the table. So not getting so wed to this is my seat and this is your seat and that's my cup and this is your bowl and that's my fork and this is your, you know, but really saying actually, like, why don't you sit over there and see what it's like to have dinner from that side of the table? And, you know, things as small as that can really be, you know, mind shifting, that I don't need to be so, wed to this one way of doing things, that there are lots of ways of doing things.
I think that explains why my kids love it when we eat in a different room.
I know, right?
Oh, the living room especially.
The TV probably has nothing to do with that.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, there are other ways, especially with children, to highlight new things and exciting things and making things that are unfamiliar interesting. Loud noises that they hear, unpredictable noises that they hear when you're at the playground, the things that they're seeing and hearing. When my children were little, it was always the planes that were flying overhead, one of the bike paths near us where we often go and just sort of meander in afternoons runs immediately alongside a train track. So when the trains would come by, that would be quite an exposure for particularly my middle child, who does not like loud noises. But making some of those unexpected loud things okay.
It seems to me there's 2 ways of sort of framing that. Like, I could imagine the train going by as being quite startling, mm-hmm. And it would be easy to frame that as scary, mm-hmm. but it also could be easy to reframe it as super exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of thunderstorms. You know, there are so many times
that's another great example.
Kids are afraid of thunderstorms, but in my family growing up, we went out to the front porch and sat on the front porch, which was covered, by the way, to really sort of take in the awesomeness and the beauty of a thunderstorm.
Those are some of those sort of entry ways of thinking about new things, unexpected things, things that are perhaps not part of the routine.
But also challenging your beliefs about something. Okay. So just to go back to the thunderstorm.
Yeah.
Is a thunderstorm scary? You know, does it need to be scary? So I think this is really important when we're talking about diversity awareness and respect, that we teach kids to question the way that they're interpreting or looking at various things.
Mm-hmm. That's a really great point. And not just thunderstorms, but even as they're getting older, the issue of questions and how do you respond to questions and how do you make questions okay becomes one that is more and more pronounced. And I'm thinking more about the times when you might, for example, be at the grocery store and there is someone in a wheelchair or someone who is not neurotypical, you know, that you're seeing out and about or at a restaurant, and the questions come up about, you know, why does so-and-so look like that, or why is so-and-so sitting in that thing, or why is so-and-so need that particular device to navigate the world? And
so many parents have the urge to shush.
Oh, all the time. And I, there's a part of me that understands where that comes from, of course, because what we're trying to do is not be disrespectful, but simultaneously what we are doing and to the detriment of diversity awareness and respect is saying it's not okay to see it.
It's not okay to talk about it.
And essentially rendering those people even more invisible than they
Absolutely.
Already are by so many parts of society. And so it takes a lot of practice, I think, for parents to build up the skill set to say, you know, that person is in a wheelchair because their body works differently than ours does, you know, or that person is at the playgrounds, the blue swing, that's a great example for little kids. The blue swing is for kids who can't use the other swings that you get to use. And we are making sure that everybody has access to all of the things that can be fun at the playground and how important that is. And making that a part of the conversation, not shying away from it, not shushing it, even if your intent is
To be respectful.
To be respectful. And that's hard. My eldest daughter, she will pick up the, like, tan crayon when she's coloring, or she plays checkers with my husband, and there's a set of black checkers is one side and, like, tan checkers on the other side, and she always says, I want to be the skin color. And on multiple occasions, I've had to say, that's your skin color. Right? Which skin color are you referring to when you're looking for a crayon? Are you looking for which variation, which color specifically are you asking for? Because when you say the skin color, that could mean all sorts of different things, because your skin color is different than my skin color, and my skin color is different than, you know, your sister's skin color, and even in our family. So, I mean, I think that I am paying attention to those, like, quick moments that could pass you by,
right.
Really so important.
I am old enough to remember the Crayola crayon that was called Flesh, which of course was white.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Not to age you.
Yeah, it's okay.
I'm doing so much reading and thinking about these topics these days, and I'm certainly not an expert, but it has brought to the forefront of my attention how many opportunities there are for us to be having these conversations and how easy it is not to have the conversations. So how easy it would be for me to let my children, you know,
right,
talk
on the
about
blue swing.
Swing on the blue swing, or use the skin-colored, you know, the
crayon.
Skin-colored crayon, or how easy it would be to let my children say things like the policeman or the fireman, or, you know, I don't want to play with trucks because trucks are for boys, which is not the case in my house. You know, trucks are everywhere. But, you know, how easy it would be to assume sort of gender stereotypes and not point those things out, because it's easier. And at the end of a long day, or when we're tired, or when we aren't thinking clearly, it can be easier as parents, I think, to let some of those things slide, and that will happen for sure. But we are not free from the responsibility of having those conversations about family systems that look differently than ours, whether that's sort of cross-generational family systems or family systems with, sets of two moms or two dads or gendered stereotypes, whether it's policemen or gendered toys, that boys can't wear nail polish or girls can't play with trucks or, whatever it might be, that we really have to be looking for opportunities to point out some of the assumptions that we make about diversity and what's normal with our children.
I think another great way to build diversity awareness and respect in our kids is to celebrate their strengths and to acknowledge and respect other people's strengths.
You're bringing to mind another really sort of prominent example in my particular family, which is that my daughter has super curly hair, and everyone points out this characteristic of hers that they can see. It makes her incredibly uncomfortable. So we have to talk about the fact that this is something about you that people can see. And so, it makes sense that that might be the first thing and sometimes even the only thing that people point out about you. But let's talk about all the things that people can't see about you. What a good friend you are and what a loving sister you are and the strengths that she has that people might not see just by looking at her from the outside. And then taking that conversation one step further and saying, here's something that you can see about your friend Joey, at school. What do you think you don't see about Joey? Let's envision all of these strengths that Joey has that you're not going to see just by looking. And by having those particular conversations, we are challenging my children to be thinking about people in ways beyond just the way that they look.
Right, and being accepting of differences. What you said also makes me wonder whether it will be important as your daughter grows to help her develop language to say, hey, let me tell you about these other parts of me.
Right.
So that the focus isn't just on her appearance or her
right.
beautiful curly hair.
Right.
But on some internal strengths that she can sort of call attention to.
Oh, you're right. I think it's two-pronged, right? I mean, we want to encourage our children and one another to be thinking about these things in the context of what we see in the world around us. And we want to give our children and one another a language to point some of that stuff out about ourselves to other people when it's not seen. But I don't think that that's enough. I don't want to just give my daughter the language to point out to other people these other parts of herself, because that puts the burden on her
right.
to educate others. I think
right.
that really what we need to be doing is saying it's our responsibility to be thinking about other people from a multitude of perspectives and through a multitude of lenses, and be finding ways of celebrating the things about them that is different, that are different than the things about us, and the things about them that are the same. In our discussion today, we talked about diversity awareness and respect, and we want to acknowledge that we did so from the vantage point of two white women from privileged socioeconomic backgrounds. So what did we talk about today? Number one, diversity is about more than just racial and ethnic identities. It's about making novelty the norm and embracing experiences, opportunities, and people that help us to think about the world more broadly.
Number two, find opportunities to develop awareness of and respect for diversity in your daily routines. Encourage new foods and different flavor profiles. Attend various cultural events in your community. And don't forget to question your stereotypes and even your language.
And number three, we have the responsibility of educating ourselves about others and the world to proactively challenge our assumptions about others. We cannot expect others to carry the burden of educating us or explaining their histories, traditions, or beliefs. I'm Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you just listened to a Greatest Eight podcast written and produced by Drs. Lindsay Anderson and Ellen Flannery Schroeder. Associate producer and engineer was Ian Reyes.
For more information related to parenting for mental health or to listen to podcasts on other topics, please visit thegreatest8.org.
That's thegreatest8.org. These podcasts were developed by the University of Rhode Island and South County Health with support from URI, the Rhode Island Foundation, and the Van Buren Charitable Foundation.